Morning, this is Lance.
Hey, Lance, good morning. Is that it?
No, this is Aaron.
Oh, hey, Aaron. Good morning.
And do you have a tape to Andy? Because I don't have my recorder with me.
I do. I've got it going right now.
Okay, perfect.
All right, Lance, Aaron, anybody else? All right. Ryan, do you know if most of the hatchery managers are expecting to call in?
I don't know. Okay. To be honest with you, I assumed.
Sure.
I can email them real quick.
Oh, that's fine.
I don't know if with the date change and then the holiday.
Oh, right, yeah.
I've got some folks out.
Might be a little confusing. We'll go ahead and get rolling here then, give them a couple minutes to call in.
Andy, real quick.
Yes, sir.
Doug, everybody. Are we on for Tuesdays from now on?
Yes, that's the plan. Yeah, so Ryan has a course that basically runs all the way through the calendar year, right? All of 2019. Yeah, so if that works for you guys, I think I checked with maybe Chad, we talked about it last week. So you guys are running the trap Monday and
Wednesday. Yeah, work for us.
When is it?
Tuesday. We're on the trap right now, Monday, Thursday.
Monday, Thursday. Okay, cool. I think it works for everybody else as far as I know. So yeah, we'll keep it on the third Tuesday for now. All right, so action items, approve the January minutes. I got a couple comments on those. No issues there, so we'll go ahead and finalize those. I'll send them out with the draft for this month. The next action item is the Willamette Hatchery Broodstock Pond. I don't really have any update on this one other than what we've talked about before, which is some money scheduled for this in the FY20 budget proposal. I haven't seen that yet. I don't know if we have it. So I'm not sure if the money was actually allocated for that or not, but we do have scheduled work on that. And I also noticed that broodstock pond update is also in the draft hatchery biop that we got from NIMS. So, which helps because it's extra motivation for us to move forward on that one. As far as the plans for that go, we have the old plans. Those are posted on the website. I know we all took a look at those and we talked about maybe updating the design a little bit.
I think given what we've learned at the facilities, the core facilities, mm-hmm. that we've been doing, Foster, and I guess all the core facilities, I think we could probably make some updates to that to be consistent with some of the other design.
Sure.
The one thing that stuck out to me was the 185-foot-long holding ponds.
Right. Pretty
not
huge.
Not exactly user-friendly.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, did we just have some folks join on the phone?
Yeah, Brett.
Hey, and Brett. And who?
Kurt.
Oh, hey, Kurt. Good morning.
Hey, guys.
We were just rolling through some action items here. So, I guess, Ryan, then what we need to decide is if we do get that money in the FY20 budget, it's not enough to design and construct, but it is enough to finalize those plans and maybe like purchase some materials or do some site scoping or something like that.
Right.
So I guess we got to decide who's going to do it, whether it's core engineers or ODFW engineers, and then I guess build out what the scope looks like for that much money.
Uh-huh.
Like what can we do with it?
Yeah. I talked to Ryan McCormick, who's our chief engineer. I mean, he was on board. I think he was in our passage shop at
mm-hmm.
the time. I think it was 2012 when those plans were put together. You know, he was happy to engage and kind of work through that. I think we just need to probably provide him a timeline.
Sure.
I think that would work for us if the Corps prefers using, internal engineers. I guess that's an option too.
Yeah, I would imagine since we're funding it, it'll be our contract, and it'll have to be a separate construction contract.
Okay.
I don't know exactly how it'll shake out, but I would imagine that ODFW could bid on it.
Okay.
But I don't know if you'd rather play that role or if you'd rather play a role of consultation on the design with us and...
Yeah, probably.
We have a third party come in and do the construction.
Yeah, really, because we would only physically do the design mm-hmm. and then contract out the work.
Yeah, you'd be contracting out too. So
right.
Yeah. So it probably makes sense for the core to do it.
Yeah, okay.
So probably Ryan and his shop and then some of our folks kind of working in coordination to figure out exactly what we want.
Sure.
And design it.
So at some point, I would think the next step would maybe be whether it's HMT or a standalone meeting, just a couple hours to talk about potential design changes and a brain, sort of brain dumping mm-hmm. exercise. And then whomever would work on the design then would kind of take that and roll that into some design changes. Now, what I don't know is if we want sort of some money in hand for design work before you would do that.
Right.
That might make sense. So you'd have whoever you're either a design consultant or internal design and engineering folks maybe then would be at the table.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Whatever you think is most efficient.
Cool. Okay, that sounds good. I'll try to do some legwork before the next HMT on that one.
Okay.
The next action item on here is the Lieberg property transfer update. Tammy brought this up at one of the last meetings with higher up folks reporting out and stressed the importance of it, but I haven't seen anything or any movement on it yet. I'm assuming you haven't either.
No.
Okay. So right now we're just operating under the assumption that a lease is coming. But yeah, we're coming up on close to a year at this point. So I'll keep pushing those guys. I know they've got some other actions that they feel are higher priority, but
okay. They
know this one's on their plate. So hopefully we'll get it pushed soon. I don't think it's causing any consternation right now or any hiccups in your operation.
So not really other than kind of the funding issue or with funding. So I don't know if you guys got a good update on that. So we put together a POP, a policy option package, submitted it with our to the governor's office with mm-hmm. our budget package. It got dropped, we're not included in the governor's budget. So technically that's the budget we need to support. So we're kind of
okay. In
a little bit of an awkward situation. What we do know is there are a number of folks at the Capitol advocating for funding. Most folks within the agency that I've talked to, the director and deputy directors, feel pretty confident that something will come.
Hmm.
It's come up at a couple of legislating hearings on other bills that constituents have kind of expressed the concern and the need for funding. But there's definitely some question there. So that maybe the lease isn't as critical, but then and we can talk more when we get down to McKenzie, but then the kind of the Lieberg Canal and McKenzie Spring Chinook, maybe I see that's where we're in a little bit of an awkward situation.
Sure.
Related to the lease and funding and all that good stuff. So maybe we can just chat about that more.
Sure.
At that point.
That sounds good. Okay. And then the last action item on here is the Willamette Hatchery. Or Willamette Hatcheries, really. It's not for Willamette Hatchery specific. Genetic clips. So the idea here was to get this contract in place through Oregon State and then also through ODFW to collect the clips and do the work and then store them at Kathleen's lab and get it in place, hopefully, before the work actually occurs. Unlike last year where the work had already finished and then we put the contract in place. So we talked about, what did we talk about? Adding steelhead to the scope of work. Right. So I guess what I need is either you or Kathleen or whoever to dust off and update that proposal from last year.
Okay.
It's going to be basically the same. And then I guess send it to me and then I'll pass it along. And I'm not actually the one that oversees that contract, but Rachel from the PME shop does. So
okay.
I talked to her and I gave her a heads up that we needed to get moving on that thing. So she said, all right, send me the proposal when it's ready.
Okay, and add steelhead?
Yeah, let me see if I can pull up that email.
We should decide if we also want to analyze steelhead outside of the DPS. Do we want Fall Creek steelhead in there? Anything south of California?
I don't know.
We take the clips anyway, but cost us no time. They'll be sitting around just so you know they're sitting around.
And you guys have them bad?
We take them anyway, wherever okay. they are.
Sure.
There's no sign in the river at the Willamette at the Kalapuya saying no go farther south.
Right, yeah. You know, kind of go where they want.
One for a transitory animal, I never got it, but whatever.
Well, didn't Fall Creek this year get as many as return to foster?
I don't know.
Or something like that? Like the number?
Junk. It's been bad.
I've seen last year.
It's bad, yeah. Yeah, but we get them, usually when we open the facility, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see soon.
They're ready to come in.
I haven't seen what has gone over the falls. It wasn't that much last time I checked.
Hey, Doug, you might let Mark Johnson of ODFW know that you have those samples, because I think they're continuing to do some work on winters, and he might be interested in those.
Okay. I guess we should just see what the gang wants, because many people are interested in them.
Okay, yeah.
Which is a good thing. People care about them. Down there, right? I dig it. Personally speaking.
So you guys have them in hand, or do they get included?
We just took them. We've taken them.
Are they in Kathleen's lab?
No, we have them.
Okay.
It costs us no extra time, because we used to tag them and see what they would do, because Jeff's wanted us to haul them above the dam, the winners.
Okay.
The non-marked fish. So. There's some that are obviously not marked that are they're summers. They walk like a duck, fly like a duck all that day.
Yeah. Lance, do you have any thoughts on where we should be taking genetic clips from steelhead that return to traps?
Yeah, I'd have to think about it. Maybe once I get comments back from the biop sections on that, we can talk a little bit more about it.
Sure.
What the priorities are and kind of continuing to assess the hatchery summer program. I mean, that's my key interest on winter steelheads. We need to continue that, and that would focus it in the Fanny Ams.
Right.
Yeah, but I think, from the biop standpoint, we still need to figure out exactly what would be the best things to further study in the future, given what we know now.
Sure. Ryan, it looked like we had talked about including steelhead samples at Minto and Foster.
Yeah.
For now. So putting those in the scope
work. Yeah, so I
think,
at McKenzie, we don't open the trap until whatever.
Not going to happen there.
May
yep.
1st or May 15th, and then Dexter's about the same.
Right.
Middle of May, so really we're past this.
Yeah, too late there. Cool, okay. So, yeah, if you and Kathleen are able to make those edits, let's put steelhead in there for Minto and Foster. And it sounds like you guys are going to keep taking them at Fall Creek?
It costs us no time.
Yeah.
And it's,
doing it anyways?
Any expense, yeah. Might as
okay.
well.
Cool. All right. So that's it on action items. So we'll move on to updates. Did Greg join us? Doesn't sound like it. Did you get any updates from Greg, Ryan, or know of anything?
Not a whole lot. Let's see. So for Marion Forks, not a whole lot going on there other than snow. They had about 30 inches of snow last weekend, and so I spent most of last week kind of cleaning that up. A little bit of rain on it, but nothing severe.
Cool.
So they've been pretty much in kind of snow winter mode. That's really everything. I think they are moving some of the ODFW productions going out this week down to the lower river.
Okay.
Minto had one unmarked winter steelhead, season total of three. So not a whole lot going on there. And then about half of the North Sandham Spring Chinook went out last week. or they started a volitional release last week.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So for new updates, that's really all. I see you had a note on there about isolation valves. I know Chris was working, so I think I sent you some numbers. I don't know if I actually sent, did I send the actual bid itself?
I was going to look. I think you did.
Okay. The only, so the bid included like, so the bid was less than the number I sent you because he just gave a number for a bank of ponds. So then you had to multiply that by four for all the circular ponds.
Okay.
When I looked at it, it took me a minute to figure out what they were doing. So it basically has addition of isolation valves for the raceways and circular ponds.
It looks like you were thinking it was around 67,000 for isolation valves at the raceways.
Yep.
And 23K per bank of circulars, so
right.
92 total for four banks. Okay.
And he's got a whole bunch of caveats with that. Doesn't include surveying, sure. compaction, excavation, permit fees, grading, bonding, dewatering, line location, prevailing wage, or shoring. So
yeah.
That's an interesting list of exclusions. Chris was working with another local contractor to get an estimate. I think they're coming out early this week, so we should at least have one more kind of ballpark estimate, hopefully.
Okay.
Sounds good. The idea was that, you know, that would allow, currently if we were, say, to deal with the piping and valving issue and asbestos issue, we have to shut off an entire water supply at the respective intake to do
right.
any work, and that would eliminate production potentially and, you know, all the ponds, half the ponds, whatever.
Right, so it'd be better to do.
Isolation valves yep. would allow you to then do banks of ponds over time to address the other issues.
Mm-hmm. So. If I remember correctly, I think there was 37,000 in the budget this year for that.
Okay.
So that'd be enough to do, by these numbers, a bank of circulars.
Right.
It'd be kind of a bummer because we're paying for like MOB and DMOB costs to have them come out a whole bunch of times. It'd
right.
be more efficient to do it all at once, but we don't have that money in the budget to do them all. There is more money scheduled for it for next year, for FY20, I believe.
Okay.
I remember looking at that. So we may be able to tick off a couple of them every few years.
Yeah.
Which would help.
And was the 37, because I know one time we were talking about specific to the asbestos issue. Is mm-hmm. that what that's tied to?
No, this was tied exactly to the replacement of the valves
okay.
and piping. But it wasn't specific, like, it doesn't have to be the valve at the head
right.
of the raceway.
It's just sort of
it's just for that system
right. okay.
as a whole.
Okay. Yeah, or maybe with 37 so. You buy... by the valves.
Yeah.
Some of the risk there, and I think we have run into this maybe, I think at McKenzie the issue was the pipe diameter, but until you dig up the pipe and get your hands on it, ordering a valve is a little risky.
Oh, right.
I think we've been burned a time or two on that one.
Sure.
But that could work. It would be to order all the valves and then install them the next year, the next budget year.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. That sounds good. I'll take a look at what's in the budget for FY20, just so we can get an idea of if we'd want to maybe keep buying things and then install them in the third year, maybe.
Okay.
Or if we'd want to, if it's enough time, we might be able to like buy them at the beginning of the fiscal year, like in October, and then do that install. I think Greg was talking about in the spring.
Right.
Is when that would occur, like April sometime.
Yep, I think that'd be ideal.
Okay. So that might work. And then I guess if you could do some research and figure out how easy it is, if we know what size piping that is, know the diameter.
Okay.
Or we could confidently buy.
Yeah, I know Chris was able to find some plans. If, you know, if they're actual construction drawings, they should
yeah.
be accurate enough to,
sure.
to pull the trigger on that.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be good to know.
Okay.
All right, so that brings us down to South Sandy Am and Foster. Brett, what do you got?
Yeah, Foster's still shut down for maintenance, and then I guess Fenton's got a study going on, so it's going to be closed into March until he gets his. I guess not study. I guess it's some maybe some maintenance on some camera equipment. As far as so, and then the maintenance has come along real well over there. The Foster maintenance staff is plugging right along, and we kind of generated a list earlier, and they've been working on those items and making some really good progress. So I think we're going to be in good shape once we water back up again. I've been working with your guys' PDT committee on the looking at some different options to try to get some warmer water into the fish ladder this upcoming season. So that's been kind of interesting. So they're, I guess, kind of the next step there is they're going to come up with a list of possibilities of what we might be able to do there. So that's, I guess, that's coming out here pretty soon, maybe by the end of the month. And then as far as hatchery goes, fish health is really good. We've met all of our summer steelhead egg allocations. They've been delivered. We released our spring release, and then we got the last 160,000 smolts from Willamette here last week, and we're acclimating those for a month. And then we'll start transferring some of our yearlings over to steelhead yearlings, I should say, over to Minto next month, and then our release of the summer steelhead yearlings starts April 1st, and then our fryer and the incubators and doing well. And then other than that, just been doing some trying to get some maintenance done, some cleanup in between.
Cool.
Hey, Brad, this is Chad. Hey, did they get that fingerwear fixed up for you guys?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, okay. They cut out those bars and got that done. Yeah, did
it turned out all right.
Yeah, they mimicked that photograph that you sent me, and yeah, it worked a lot. It was a little easier for them because, you know, it was aluminum like we saw versus the stainless that you guys had on yours. So.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, no, it worked out good. Thanks for your guys' input on that.
Brett, do you think that'll end up making a difference?
Well, yeah, they won't be able to get out.
Yeah, it seems like kind of an easy fix.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Well, that'll be interesting to see once you fire the facility back up. What kind of, if you know offhand, what kind of maintenance items are the maintenance crew tackling out there at Foster?
Well, the first one was fixing the weir. And then I said we generate a list. We had some of the screens on the post-sort pools that were kind of starting to pop out of place. They're putting those back into place. All the so-called waterproof and UV-proof pennants and controls are all getting a lot of corrosion stuff in them. So they replaced the crowding channel controlled or pennant with a remote that will be able to store out of the weather, out of the element. So we're going to kind of try it on that one before maybe possibly, you know, moving that over to post-sort pools. But, those all have to be cleaned up, corrosion cleaned out. A lot of the brushes along the, in the fish lock, in the post-sort or pre-sort pool, the brushes along the brails are, you know, starting to fall off. The brushes along the sides of the crowders are starting to detach. So those all need to be put back on. And then there's your general PMs, the greasing, the, you know, checking motors, you know, those sorts of things. A lot of the limits, a couple of limit switches on the crowders need to be cleaned out or replaced. So just mainly that kind of stuff.
Cool. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Brett, this is Lance. Can you remind me how you ended up on summer steelhead spawning as far as timing? What percentage of the brood was taken by the end of December and the end of January? You happen to have those?
I don't have the exact percentages, but we finished up right after the first of the year, and we could have gotten all our production by the first, but we just ran into the holidays. So I can get those percentages to you, but we had enough to meet the egg needs this year early. We definitely got our production. We took our, I guess, the South San Yam and the North San Yam production out of that first take, which was taken prior to the end of the year. And then we took the Willamette Bonneville allocations out of the one. It was right after the first of the year.
Yeah, Lance, I think the last spawn day, Brett will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the last spawn day was the 3rd of January.
Yeah, it was right after the holiday.
Wow, all right, good.
Hey, Brett, back to the Foster ladder and water temperature issues. Do you know what that PDT is considering as far as alternatives?
Or is it? They're just kind of ideas and concepts right now, but they're looking at maybe tapping into an existing intake, you know, like which could potentially be the hatchery upper intake, or utilizing the upper intake, the upper penstock, old upper penstock intake, creating a siphon, you know, there's pumping water there. Like I said, there's just a bunch of concepts right now. So they're just kind of starting to get that list together.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
It sounds like Ryan might try to call in on the next meeting, and I may end up sitting in on one of those, or some folks from the Valley Operations crew, just to keep tabs on what those guys are thinking.
Yeah, no, it's been, like I said, it's nice to see it, you know, that's being looked at, for sure.
For sure, yeah, sometimes it takes a while to stand up those teams, but once they're set and they have funding and they have members and a PM and all that kind of stuff, then they usually get cracking pretty well. So
yeah,
that's good. I know I've been out there a couple times looking at stuff with you before, and yeah, it's just hard to get some momentum sometimes, but glad to hear those guys are moving.
Yeah, for sure.
So it sounds like part of the discussion is on temperature and trying to get, as Brett said, potentially an alternative intake structure, warmer water. And then the other discussion, and I remember we had it, I think, in this group when Cam was still around, was about, you know, kind of the olfactory imprinting and having juveniles on hand.
Right.
So I think Brett's working through a couple of scenarios where, at least experimentally, you could have juvenile Chinook on hand during trapping season to monitor the effect on attraction.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll at least be part of it from a conceptual part. It's unfortunate that the post-store ponds weren't designed to hold juveniles.
Yep.
Hold or release. It would have been really, really simple.
Make it easy.
So that was Brett and I talked a little bit last week about, you know, I think a temporary, you know, above ground pond, tank, whatever would work. But I think we kind of also need to keep in mind, like, okay, if that does work and that is the solution, what would we do long term to address it?
Right.
And it seems like you have those ponds, holding them there, holding juveniles there would be relatively simple. But
you just gotta like truck them in and then, unfortunately, truck them back out.
Yeah, unless there was some modifications made to the release pipe, the effluent pipe, and then if you had a release pipe. But anyway, more discussion on that for sure.
I think last time we were brainstorming about that, we came up with the idea of maybe putting a pond on top of the, it's not really an aeration tower, but what's the, on top of like the sump?
Oh, the ink at the water tower?
Yeah.
I looked at that too a little bit, but it would be hard to get those fish up there now.
Yeah, you'd have to put in some kind of
a pressure washer up there the other day, and it was a little sketchy.
Yeah, you'd have to have a good lifting system.
Yeah, but I sent it to the team. I put together kind of a few of the options, and one of them would be putting like a couple 12-foot circulars, and we could utilize the existing hose pad to set them. And you got the release line running right by there. You're really close to the pre-sort, so that might be an option for an experimental, you know, kind of phase of this.
Sure.
Or you could get like 10,000 juveniles on site for the summer months.
Sounds good. Cool. Well, yeah, we'll keep our eyes on some of those improvements or tests as the season progresses. I guess let me and the other HMT folks know if there's things that are going to impact hatchery operations, or if the team's coming up with a design that gives you pause or is going to impact how the facility works. Just give us a heads up.
Okay, we'll do it.
Cool. All right, so we'll move on to McKenzie. Kurt, you want to give us an update?
Sure. I guess the most interesting thing would be what kind of water supply we have.
Yeah.
That seems to be the pick of the moment. So last week we were able to test our intakes. Since we got all of our fry out of incubation, we didn't have to worry about pulling water away from them, which tends to happen when we do some other things with valves. But so we were pulling, it looks to me like we can get 10 plus CFS out of a canal. And that was, would not, you know, not, I believe that we might be able to get a little bit more, but I'm not really sure. It's just, if we can bring that up with a coffer dam, even a few inches would probably allow us to get a little bit more out of there, maybe up to 15, I'm kind of guessing there. But with Cogswell Creek having about, 18 CFS in it the other day when we were testing it, we were pulling 25 plus through the hatchery along with the Lieber Canal. We had 7 ponds running, the adult pond running, and our collection channel running also. It looks like we can get some water. Early in the collection, adult collection, we certainly could pull that 10 out of the canal, whatever we can get out of Cogswell Creek. Looking back for 5 years, you know, it's varied so much because of snowpack or just the rain for the year. And obviously we're way behind in rain this year, but you know, we can get whatever we can in May out of there. It could be up to 15 CFS, it could be 3, you know. So that is, Cogswell Creek will be just like a bonus to whatever we can get out of the canal. Obviously, as we drop into mid-June into July, that drops off really dramatically, 2 CFS or less as we get through July and August. So, but at least we can get something down through there. Our fish ladder does operate on 10 or 12 CFS to operate the actual ladder itself into the collection area. All other added attraction comes out at the bottom of the fish ladder. So we can at least run the fish ladder and get fish to come in, hopefully, and we'll be able to collect them. We'll just see how much attraction, the attraction we have, if it's going to be adequate or not.
And Kurt, if I remember correctly, when you have all the juvenile ponds running, that's like an additional 40 CFS of attraction water that comes out of there?
That's about right, yep.
So yep. Pretty significant compared to 12.
It really is, yeah. We usually run the whole system about 50 to 55, 60 CFS, depending on what we can get out of Cogswell Creek during the early collection time, May and early June. So, and then as we get into the latter parts of the collection, it's right around 50, 51. So, yeah, so it's a significant amount, only a fifth or better that we will be able to run through there and hope for the best on getting some fish to come on in. Looks like the coffer dam, I think, and maybe Ryan can chime in on this, I think we're at a final design on that. We've had 2 or 3 different types that we have been looking at. The most recent one is using eco blocks in the canal with some stanchion and jam boards on top of that, plastic coverings to seal it and that much. But with some restrictions that EWEB has, and FERC is kind of holding them to it, is to not bring the water level up more than, you know, a few inches than what it already is. So that's really problematic in trying to get even more and more water down through the system. They're just worried about rain events. You know, maybe that's legitimate in May and maybe the first part of June. But after that, I can't imagine any rain events having any problem with the canal. We were throwing it around. Well, maybe at that time we can raise the level, but I'm not sure if that'll be an option or not. So the other thing that people have been working on, Jeff Ziller mostly, is a steep pass collection area up there at Lieberg Dam, the Danil steep pass ladder kind of thing. Fish will come into a collection area, and a technician would be there to say hatchery or wild. Fish goes forward. If it's wild, hatchery goes into a tank where it can be taken over to the hatchery. I know Jeff was up there with a couple of eWeb biologists and his assistant Jeremy, and they were checking that on, I think it was Friday or Thursday. No, I think it was Thursday or something last week. Anyway, it's going to be challenging, but they're hopeful that they can get it in. So that will allow to get some separation of those hatchery fish at the dam. So that's the main hope for that.
And then also potentially collecting some brood stock in case we can't attract as many adults back into the McKenzie hatchery as we'd like.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's probably the priority at the moment until we know what we can do, you know. So yeah, that certainly would be a priority for that steep pass to be put installed.
On the cofferdam, I think Kurt's right, we've got version 2 or 3 of a cofferdam design. I think you've seen that. Mm-hmm. Most recent one, eWeb. I think we addressed eWeb's concern. But where are we in terms of a process, like next step?
Yeah, so I talked to Kurt and Ryan McCormick last week about this, but
okay.
So I think the way this will run is once we have a design that works with eWeb and that works with FERC, then our engineers, they've already started taking a look at some of the stuff Ryan's put together, and I helped them answer some questions, but they'll take a look because obviously they want to sign off on it because it'll end up being a contract that we will oversee.
Sure.
So there, I mean, maybe less flexibility that way, but also some benefits in terms of the environmental compliance. So we don't have to get the nationwide 33 permit if the Corps or the Corps' contractor is doing the work.
Okay.
Which is kind of nice. Whereas if this contractor was eWeb's or maybe even the state's, you would have to apply to us for that
permit. Right.
So it gets that part out of the way. So basically, once we have plans that are sufficient with everybody, we'll incorporate those, review them, put them into a contract, put that out to bid, and we'll try to fast track it as much as possible. There's a team in the Portland district called the Small Projects Team.
Okay.
And so they're kind of separate from the main big construction branch. They still do all the same stuff, but they deal with some of these smaller type of projects, as the name would suggest. So I've been talking with a few of those guys. They're looking at the plans. They're going to get like a budget proposal together. They take care of the whole thing from like design to overseeing the contractor. But obviously there's going to be a lot of coordination with ODFW, with eWeb, and then also
right.
maybe with FERC too.
Okay.
So that's kind of a general structure of how things will probably play out.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The main thing I'm concerned about is I don't want a design to get submitted to FERC. They're looking at it, but then the same design comes to the Corps, and then we want to change something.
Right.
And then we have to resubmit to FERC and restart that 60-day review process.
Yeah. Okay. So we know, I think Ryan McCormick has talked to FERC. I think obviously eWeb has talked to FERC. We think we know what they're going to approve.
Okay.
I guess that's maybe a question or maybe a statement. But we're waiting to hear back from eWeb on the most recent design. Is that
right.
Your understanding?
Yeah, that's the recent
email
traffic that I've seen. Yeah, because they sent back like some red line
right.
suggestions, like erosion
those.
On the backside and stanchion supports and whatever. Yeah. So cool. If that's what FERC is going to roll with, then that's what I'll start using on our side of it.
Okay, sounds good.
The other consideration I guess we had was the bed surface in the canal itself. It sounds like it's pretty big rock, like 4-inch plus kind of stuff.
Okay.
So to use ecology blocks, you'd have to go in there and level it out and probably place gravel to get them all even to like interlock together and sit correctly. So construction materials dictate what you need to do to perform that construction. So like,
right.
okay, now we're talking about getting like a track hoe in there or something, and what's the access for heavy equipment. And that
yeah.
plays into the different reviews we
okay.
have to do for, because this unfortunately ends up being in-water work.
Right.
And it's a little bit easier because it's not the freaking McKenzie River, it's just
yeah.
a canal, but there's still more considerations.
My understanding is eWeb doesn't have the ability to decrease the flow much more than it already is.
Right.
Maybe they do. But yeah, it'll be preparing that work surface could be challenging.
Yeah.
You could, and I think the canal's narrow enough that doing a temporary cofferdam might be an option, but that could even be challenging. I think that's what Ryan had talked about, was eating like a temporary cofferdam with sandbags to then build half of the eco block structure and then
swap sides. Yeah.
But that could be challenging.
How much water is E-Web keeping in the canal?
So Kurt maybe has the best line on this, but I think it's around 100 CFS.
Yeah, you know, they don't really know. Just looking at the water flowing by, I would say it's, you know, definitely plus 50 CFS, probably closer to 100.
So does it look like this summer that the water temperature should be okay in the canal then? You guys have any concerns with it getting too hot or?
Yeah, there's always concern of that, yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, in 2003, the water level was higher, and we had water temperature spike at 70 degrees late July. Mm. So that wasn't good. But it was more of a big, long lake at that time, because there was the only outlet was our intake. And the way this looks to me, there will be water passing the intake at the same time as we're pulling it in. So maybe there'll be some more turnover than what there was at that time.
Kurt, after that water flows in the canal past the hatchery's intake, where is it going?
It goes down to a gate down at the powerhouse. It's called their mud gate, they always call it. It's like the lowest gate they can open to keep the canal as low as it is right now.
Okay. Hmm.
So this is Lance, a couple of questions. So the cofferdam design that you guys have as your latest, greatest design, is that what's necessary to provide adequate water through the hatchery, or just kind of the minimalist approach?
Yeah, Lance, this is Ryan. I think likely the latter. We had originally started on design to get to an elevation of something like 733 feet or something like that, which isn't really critical, but to get kind of normal operating flow for what Kurt needed. But E-Web was pretty adamant that they wouldn't approve that elevation, nor would FERC, because of some other issues with potential rainfall and the elevation of their wastegate upstream of the hatchery's intake. So we're kind of stuck at this elevation of 727 feet. So it's like 6 feet elevation less than ideal, so it's definitely that minimum flow requirement point.
Okay, well, you know, as you think about this, but as you guys continue to walk through this, you should have in your documents or whatever that what is preferred, because there may be some flexibility, or once further discussions, they may be open to other alternatives. And it, you know, if we're walking through this, it would be good to at least have on paper what we really need, and not, you know, accommodate to the minimalist approach even from the get-go, especially if we think that the safety concerns or the fears are not real at that time of the year.
Yeah, good point, Lance. That I think we can, at least from our end, I think we can push out two concepts. Cool.
And then the other thing I'll add, we talked about it internally with our folks. You know, Melissa has been working with E-Web and on the canal stuff for decades now, and she reminded me back when we had that canal drawn down, what, 03 or 04, that there was piping that was put in place to accommodate the needs at the hatchery, the water supply. And so she was really advocating, you know, looking at that also as an alternative and maybe even a long-term fix, because we're going to continue to deal with these issues. And so, you know, have that on your radar. I don't know what it means for this season, if that's a possibility, but maybe be thinking about that as well.
Yeah, and what that was, Lance, that was, so they were redoing the screening air at the head of the canal, just downstream from the dam. So they had a copper dam above the work site and a copper dam below the work site. and they were actually pumping water around that. They were supposed to pump 50 CFS, so we could never get more than 35. So that pipe that you're talking about was really just really localized right there around the work site. So there was nothing that came down here to the hatchery other than they were just throwing some water into the canal itself. I think I don't know what it would look like, but yeah, having something that would really work for the hatchery would be like, what, run 2 miles of pipe right down the canal and have it come into our intake. When we need it, we got it, you know. But I don't know how that would work or look. But I agree with you. Yeah, it'd be nice to have a permanent fix.
Yeah, we actually tossed around some of those similar type ideas last week. It's like, what if we could just run a pipe on the top of the bank of the canal all the way from the lake down to the hatchery? But then it's like, all right, well, is E-Web going to allow a pipe like that to sit on top of their bank? And what does that do with equipment up there? And you're going to have to screen the intake somehow. So how does that work? Do you have a separate intake at the lake? A lot of questions, but it would make the hatchery more resilient to canal outages. Mm-hmm. Basically, it would be like an independent system. So long term, that'd be an awesome fix.
Yeah, it would. It would be really great. You know, there's a road on top of their canal wall there, and I don't know, maybe a 36-inch line could run down the wall there. I mean, on top, I think there's room. I mean, I've walked the whole thing. I believe there's room there, but how much room is adequate might be an issue in some places. And then you got a highway crossing you got to deal with. You've got probably about 4 residential roads you got to deal with. So there's a lot of issues with that also.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there's always something.
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, from our perspective, we'd like to push the fix to get as much water through the hatchery as possible, because that's as close to status quo. And with all the uncertainty with the Lieber Dam operations and all of that, you know, getting those hatchery fish back at the hatchery is the best case scenario. So just encourage you guys to do all that you can to get water into the hatchery, through the hatchery, out the ladder to attract dolts back, and let us know what we can do. I know Melissa had talked with Lisa at E-Web and found out some information on process and all that, and what she told me was, you know, things don't look good for any kind of, you know, in getting it resolved and the canal functioning as normal anytime throughout the spring Chinook run. So we need to kind of manage it as best we can starting now.
Hey Lance, on the Lieberg ladder, you know, Kurt talked about the work that Jeff's put into at least discussion about a steep pass and sorting option. What's your thought on that? And likelihood of something like that being in place this year?
Yeah, I think I emailed Jeff back and just let him know that we need more details on what things look like. I think we're okay. Well, at least I'm okay with trying to do something given the situation, but in order for us to kind of give you the thumbs up, we needed more details on what the design looked like and those types of things. I mean, all we've seen is kind of the sketch that was developed, and you know, conceptually it holds a lot of promise, but we need that next set of details.
Sounds good.
Do you guys know if you have like a steep pass that is prefab that you could put in there, or would we be building something from scratch here?
Kurt, do you know the answer to that?
You know, I really don't. I know there's stuff over at Sheriff's Falls on the Deschutes, but I think that's something they use every year. I know Jeff was involved with that years ago, and that's something that's, like I say, I think is installed, or maybe it just stays on place or throughout this year. But, you know, I don't know what could be in people's boneyards of different districts and stuff. You never know. So I really don't know how to answer that one, other than that there possibly could be something, but most likely not.
Okay.
I think Jeff has been in touch with, what's the name of the company, Kurt? Is it, you guys might know, Mark Wade?
EG Solutions?
What is it?
EG Solutions.
EG Solutions. So I think Mark is a retired ODFW research bio. And okay. I think that kind of thing would be right up their alley from a fabrication standpoint.
Nice. Okay. Well, thanks, Kurt. I assume all the fish up at... well, actually, are you, all your releases done for the year, or you still have a few more in early March?
Oh, I have two more to go. So I'll continue on with some fish stuff here.
Yeah.
So we released 200,000 from Lieberg the, 22nd of January, something like that. Took advantage of a nice river flow, did get those fish out from Lieberg. So with further discussion with Jeff and talking about how can we get, you know, those fish back over here and acclimate them for a couple of weeks at least, the next two releases, we're going to do that. So this week we're going to move another 200,000 down from Lieberg into, since we found out we can run six ponds here at McKenzie, we'll get those fish back down here, acclimate them for 2 to 3 weeks and release them, and then bring the next group down to acclimate them again for another 2 to 3 weeks for that group. And so just so that we make that effort to acclimate them here and hopefully don't have any big straying problems a few years from now. So that, like I say, we're gonna do that Wednesday and Thursday, bring those fish, the next group down, and we should be fine with that. I think our water supply should be just fine. We, like I said, we ran six, seven ponds the other day, and we didn't have any troubles with that, and that's what we need is six ponds. So that should be something we can do pretty easily, I believe. More releases.
Yeah, on that, thanks, Kurt. So Andy, last time we talked, we had planned on releasing them for Lieberg, and it's
right.
been kind of a pinball, and I think, you know, our intent is certainly to do what, you know, what collectively we feel is best for the fish. I think ideally
sure.
we would release them from McKenzie, so that, as Kurt mentioned, kind of a late, you know, decision to move them back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me know what you think if we need to kind of jump back in that, because you were working on a contract mod. So I think what it would likely look like is, you know, obviously the one release is done, and mm-hmm. then the other two would transfer back to McKenzie. If it's a big deal, I don't think it's not a big deal to us in terms of how
sure.
you want to incorporate that. I mean, I think we're more worried about kind of doing what's best and
yeah.
prevent those fish from going back to Lieberg.
No, it makes sense. So. I know at first we were talking about like just putting them at the boat ramp there or something.
Yeah.
It seemed like that was a lot of work from probably not much benefit. But
yeah,
if you can get 2 or 3 weeks of acclimation, that
right.
seems like it's probably worth it. I think that mod was built with transfer to Lieberg and also transfer back, because when we were doing that mod at the time, we thought the outage in the canal was more of a short-term
right.
thing.
Yeah, but then I thought when you and I talked a month ago, and we about at that time we had thought that all the releases would come from Lieberg.
Oh,
I thought maybe
right.
you pulled that transfer back out of the mod.
I'll have to go check. I'll make a note to check with contracting on that one.
Okay. If you need anything from me, let me know.
I did check with Pat Collins, who's working on that mod, and I know it's on his radar.
Okay.
So I think he's working on it this week or next week.
Sounds good.
I guess just to finish up at McKenzie, our fry are doing well. Fish health is good. Amy was here a couple weeks ago, I guess it's been. But anyway, yeah, fish health is really good. And we're just keeping busy.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, Kurt.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Helms.
Cougar, not a lot to report on. We are scheduled to open the facility the week of March 18th. So.
March 18th,
yeah,
cool.
So we met on site a week or so ago and kind of looked at a few last-minute things that need to get fixed or repaired before we open the facility. But, otherwise we're slated for the week of the 18th.
Cool. Any big maintenance that went on this winter?
No.
No?
Not any big maintenance. I mean,
cool.
There's a couple things that we still are looking to address. There's some issues with some of the valves on the post-sort pools with some water intrusion and stuff like that. So we met with some of our
folks last week and try to get a path forward to get some of those bigger items addressed.
Cool. Sounds good. Doug, got anything for Fall Creek?
No, not really. We're chugging along with the water supply contract, hoping to button that up so we can open the facility mid-March. That's about it. Nothing new.
I heard maybe from Greg last week that contractor may not finish everything up, so we might be looking at coming back next year.
Yeah,
but they didn't quite know. Yeah,
I don't want to speculate.
Okay,
I'm usually wrong. But yeah, you can.
Fair enough. Sorry, what did you say for an opening date?
Mid-March. Depends
mid-March.
On
sure.
Cougar and staff availability. There was talk of opening it the week prior to Cougar week.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's staff. We may open it up on the Thursday prior to whatever the day, the Thursday before the Monday the 18th is.
Gotcha.
We'll see. Depending on staff, just to fire it up and then come back on Monday and check on it. Yeah.
Sure. Sounds good. Cool. Thank you, sir. Did Dan Peck call in? Doesn't sound like it. Ryan, did you get anything from Dan?
Just a couple quick updates for Willamette. Releases to Dexter have begun and are going well, so no issues there. Last week they hauled the 267,000 fish over Coast Fork for release. That was delayed a couple of days with the weather we had, or at least the fear of weather we had.
Yep.
Some stuff. But those got released last week. And then I think, as Brett mentioned, South San Diego should have got hauled back to the south. So lots of transport in the last couple of weeks out of Willamette. Otherwise, things are going pretty good in there, working away, plugging away as time allows on the raspidling. So I asked Dan if they'd have water in there this year, and he's still scratching his head. So I don't know if that obviously the intent of that has kind of changed in the last couple of years. I don't know, at some point
right.
Have some discussion, some HMT discussion on that. I think he and Chris have talked a little bit about what it would take to get it kind of operational.
Sure.
The biggest thing lacking is tanks.
Yeah, that's what he told me, like six or eight tanks or something like
right.
that.
So, the one thing I did chat with Jeff about last week, and it might be good to talk about. So Jeff asked me what I thought, at least from sort of mind of things and what we could be able to do in the contract about releasing. So I think this would be next year, potentially releasing a subset of the Middle Fork Spring Chinook at the base of Fall Creek. The way I read the contract, I mean, I think that would fall within the Middle Fork release. There isn't anything spelled out in terms of release location, but I didn't know what you guys thought, or I don't know if maybe Lance has some thoughts on that. I'm guessing it'd be a relative, like a couple of truckloads, 50,000 or 100,000 smolts released, with the intent to have some Chinook back to Fall Creek to test that facility, is kind of the way Jeff phrased it. So what that, and I think those, do you guys outplant hatchery Chinook?
Nope.
Above?
Not since July of 09.
Okay. Okay, so yeah, I mean, Jeff obviously would have the details there with his intent, but...
We used to release 90,000 at the base of the dam.
Okay. So, anyway,
do you know when that was, Doug?
I don't have the date.
Way back when?
Way back when.
Yeah.
Not too long ago.
Did they stop for any particular reason?
Not quite sure, but it was coincidental with the buyout, but I get to the exact reason.
Yeah, huh.
Yeah, it's when we started seeing, decent numbers of natural origin fish at Fall Creek. There was no need to continue to supplement with hatchery, so we just eliminated that and let that subpopulation ride on its own to evaluate it.
Do you remember the year?
Minimize hatchery.
We stopped. The first
yeah,
year.
It was that 09, 8,
that's
10, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I'll add it to my chart. You're right.
Well, so as far, this would be at the mouth of Fall Creek, these releases?
My understanding,
or in Fall Creek.
In Fall Creek is my understanding from a real brief conversation with Jeff last week.
Above Ryan or below?
Below the
below. Okay.
Yeah.
And was this just to evaluate the ladder, or was this to provide some kind of angling opportunities in Fall Creek? Or
likely both, but I think the prior, I think, evaluate the ladder and trap facility.
Okay.
But, I mean, if that decision was made and
there
isn't support for it, I think that's fine. I can circle back with Jeff.
Yeah, it could bring up some.
Do you guys need more fish to test
I mean, off the cuff, it doesn't sound like a good idea.
If we had a big disease pod, but again, there's a zillion reasons either way, I guess.
Yeah.
What
Sorry.
Was that, Lance?
Oh, I was just saying, it doesn't sound like a good idea to me.
I mean, we just stopped.
I mean, we want that area just to...
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Keep interrupting.
My bad, Lance. I was just thinking along your thoughts. Sorry.
Thanks, Lance. That's helpful. I'll follow up with Jeff, and if he has other thoughts or whatever, I'll just have him contact you directly.
Okay.
All right. So that brings us to the end of the agenda. Let's see, Ryan, I think we talked about the Foster ladder and the arm and E stuff. Lance, did you want to give any update on the draft biop?
Sure, yeah, I can spend a minute or so on that. So the draft biop for all of the hatchery programs in the Upper Willamette has gone out to ODFW and the Corps. So if any of you are interested to kind of see the assessment or what we're thinking on the programs, contact probably Kelly Reese for ODFW and then Andy for the Corps. We're looking to get comments back. I don't know. Andy had requested more time. I need to figure out what's going to work to do that. But kind of the end of March, this February. We're looking for comments probably mid March, back from the co-managers on that. And essentially, you know, there's some critical terms and conditions is what we call them, you know, how to operate the programs. There's some important monitoring that we feel needs to get reinstated in throughout the basin to help manage the hatchery program and assess things. And as you guys are aware, the big ticket item, once this is all said and done, is it'll give the opportunity to start incorporating wild Chinook into the hatchery brood stocks for the salmon programs. And so there's, you know, conditions in doing that for every season. And so once that's all finalized, we need to get that out to all of the managers so you have those things, and then maybe we can plan for it the next opportunity. So it's kind of based on the size of the wild run. And that guides how many fish can potentially be used, collected for hatchery brood stock. And so the need is, you know, we're using these salmon programs for reintroduction above the dams, that conservation benefit. And so we want to have those brood stocks mimic the natural population to the extent possible. And that's pretty difficult in these programs because we have so few wild fish in most of the populations and then pretty large hatchery brood stocks. But I think there's a balance, you know, that we can have where we're not impacting the wild run too much, but getting some benefits of those wild fish incorporated into the brood stock. So that's kind of the major change that will occur once this consultation is all done.
Cool. Thanks, Lance. What we were thinking in the core is try to get all of our comments together by mid-March, and then wrap those up and send them over to you guys by the end of the month. If you need us to bump that up a little bit, I think we can probably bump it up by a week or so.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk talk about this a little bit more, what's going to work for you.
Yeah. Did Kelly Reese say anything about timeline?
I think she was planning for the end of February, as okay. we requested. But if we're going to give you guys more time, I'll let her know that she could, ODFW could have more time too.
Okay. Cool. Any questions for Lance on that? Cool. All right, well, that's all I've got for HMT today, unless there's anything else. Nope. All right, cool. Well, thanks for calling in, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right,
see
thanks.
See ya.
All right, adios.
Hey, Ryan.